From the Ghost Knight Media Studios, welcome to the Paranormal Underground Presents podcast, where we explore the unexplained with our resident panel and our special guests.
Hey everybody, it's Karen, and we have a different kind of podcast for you today. We are just sitting down and talking with some good friends of ours from Northwest Paranormal Investigation Agency. And so today you just have me and also my husband Jim from Paranormal Underground, and then we are talking to four of the members of NWPIA. We have Bert Coates. Hey, Bert.
Hey.
Hey, we have Jamie Coates. Hi, Jamie.
Hello.
We have Bobby Ward. Hi, Bobby.
Howdy.
And we have Jenny Frank. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
So, and oh, and hi, Jim. Sorry.
Hello there.
He's rubbing my feet and I just sort of drifted away for a minute. The reason that we're doing this podcast is because, has it been 3 weeks now? About 3 weeks ago, eight of us spent some time up at Wellington, and it was the 100-year anniversary of the Wellington Avalanche. So we thought that we would get as many of us together as we could to talk about that. The other two people who were with us were, what's Joe's last name?
Joe Rowell.
Joe Rowell, a.k.a. MacGyver. And then Tim Core was with us, too, and they're not with us on the podcast, but they were with us as well, and we had a really good time. So, Bert, why don't you start just by telling us why you wanted to go up on the 100-year anniversary of Wellington?
It was important for me because of the amount of time that we spent up there investigating the place and kind of doing research, you know, reading the books and figuring out who everybody is. So, you know, it was a pretty big event back then. We wanted to test out some theories on, you know, residual. And, you know, if it's, I guess if we were going to catch anything big, I think it would have been that day. Or at least I thought it was going to be that day.
Yeah.
So, it was really important for me because we have been spending so much time with the spirits of Wellington.
Yeah, and the same reason that I went. I think Jim just went because he wanted to see me hike through the snow, and he thought that would be amusing. Is that why you went, hon?
No, but that was just an added bonus.
And where's bobsledding suit?
Oh, God.
You're looking pretty good there, Jim.
I was aerodynamic.
Well, you know, and we were on the way home. Jim was wearing this black. I said it was blue in my blog. He was wearing this black. What was it exactly?
It was just mountaineering underwear.
It was mountaineering underwear, but it looked like a bobsledding singlet. And so Jamie said, the last thing Jamie said before we left the house is, don't stop anywhere on the way home. And of course, we wanted to stop for lunch, but the place we were going to go, the drive-thru was broken, so we just drove straight home. I didn't want Jim to, you know, show people his bobsledding singlet. It was a little frightening. Jamie, even though most of the people who are familiar with Paranormal Underground and my blog and our podcast are familiar with Wellington, we may have a few people who aren't. Can you talk a little bit about Wellington and what happened there and what goes on there now?
Well, Wellington was one of the worst avalanche disasters in the state of Washington. On March 1st, 1910, at 1:42 a.m., 96 people had lost their lives. There is a lot of paranormal activity that goes on up there. So, and being that Bert and I live so close, I mean, we get a chance to go up there all the time and, you know, try out different theories and go up there quite often and have quite a few experiences up there, along with we get to share it with our team, too.
Right. So, Bobby and Jenny, how long have you guys been going up to Wellington then?
I've been a part of the group since May of last year, 2009. And any investigation that we've had going and I had the time available, I was right there. And so I've got to go up to Wellington quite a few times last year. So.
I joined two or 3 weeks after Jenny. So... yeah, and I've made myself available as often as possible. So.
Well, I got to think, Bobby, that the ghosts up there probably get a kick out of you because you are, not the straight man. I'm not talking about sexual preference. I mean,
no, that's whatever. Well,
I'm not picky. I just make myself available.
So Jim wants to make sure that we point out that when Jamie was talking, the train sounds going by were actually just a train going by your house, and you know, nope, it wasn't ghosts from Wellington.
Yeah.
So, for any one of you, why don't you guys tell me some of the things that you've come across as far as paranormal activity up there in the last, what, 5 years? Is it 5 years you've been going up?
Yeah, it's been about 5 years. Geez, you know, we've had so many strange events that have happened up there. I think the most memorable was Jamie's of last year when she ran into No Face, which I think we may have a name for, right?
I hope so. Yeah, we need to try it out, don't we? We'll talk about that in a few minutes.
And that's something that's definitely, I mean, after so many years of going up there, and even though, you know, we may just get a couple EVPs or maybe a glance of a black shadow or anything, but even after so many years of going up there and finally seeing what we call No Face, last year for the first time, it's definitely worth the wait and all the work that you put into researching Wellington.
Yeah, definitely. Why don't you tell us a little bit about why you were able to get into a place where an avalanche occurred 100 years ago, on the 100 year anniversary, why this year you could get in and what it takes you to get in there?
Well, you definitely need a 4-wheel drive. And a walking stick, a bobsled suit.
Snowmobiles are optional.
Snowmobiles would be awesome.
Yeah, they really would be. The road that we take down there isn't your standard road. It's a road where 4-wheel drives are pretty much the staple for that area. But it was a lot lower than it was last year, so we were able to pretty much jeep our way in there. Most of the way. We had to dig Joe out maybe once or twice, and it's a lot of work.
It's definitely a challenge, and it's like every year as we dig ourselves in and we get 1 inch closer and closer, it becomes even more of a challenge and even more important to get in there. You know, does that make any sense?
It does.
There.
And at least we know if we slide off the road and roll down the hill, we won't have to hike down into the wreckage. We'll be part of it.
Yeah.
It's a lot of hard work, and we don't mind it. I mean, that's how passionate we are about getting in there, you know, into Wellington, before the huge crowds come in. Or, you know, it gives us a chance to kind of, you know, say hello for that year. And it's almost like a private setting with a bunch of your friends, you know, at your house. So, and that's what we kind of consider Wellington as. It's sort of like a home away from home to us because we are drawn to it. Almost every day of every year so far, we pretty much talked about it or wonder what's going on up there tonight. You know, we'll get a thunderstorm rolling through and we'll load up the van as fast as we can and drive up there just to see if, you know, that whole theory is holds water. But
well, explain that with the thunderstorm, because people might not understand why a thunderstorm would trigger anything.
Well, it's usually the lightning. Lightning produces energy, and the theory behind that is when you have displaced energy, the ghosts can manifest themselves with that energy supply, and it gives them what they need to communicate or, you know, make themselves known that they're there.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have to bring up all the generators and the Tesla coil.
Right.
Tesla coil.
So we run up there and test the theories, and we live really close, so it's easy for us to do. You know, it's not like, you know, a lot of people that live in Canton, like you guys, Chehalis.
Yeah.
You can't just jump in the car and run up there. So it's not just for us. We're excited to tell everybody. You know, I think Jenny and Bobby get the phone call I don't know how many times we emailed him, called him, and said, hey, we're going up there in about an hour. So it's neat to test out those theories, and we have the opportunity, because we do live so close, to do that.
Have you had some theories that hold water, you think, or do you need more testing?
There's one in particular up there, and it has to do with music. Tim played the harmonica, and that's when Jamie had her experience with one of the ghosts up there. And No Face, he shows himself, I think he only shows himself to certain people.
Mm-hmm.
So you're the chosen one of this year. So I think music does it. They seem to be really active when you play really anything that's kind of upbeat. Because didn't we do a music test? What did we use? I can't remember. We used all sorts of music.
Yeah, we tried all
guitar, even with an iPod and stuff, right?
That's right.
With Wes.
Yeah.
And some classical type music, and then
actually some 1910 type music.
Oh,
also,
yeah.
Right.
Which was really
like By the Light of the Silvery Moon or something.
Yes. we even played Dean Martin, and I think I was the only one in the entire group that enjoyed that.
That's amore.
Exactly. You know what you think? With the Italians that were out there.
Well, and we've played Italian opera up there, and of course Jim has done his. Go ahead, do it, Jim.
I don't think I can.
Jim's done the.
Okay,
he's got his book. He's going to smack himself in the head. Jim does this.
Jesu Domine. Donaes Requiem.
And I have to tell you, when he's done that a couple times, we've actually had something happen. They probably want him to shut up.
That's some funny stuff. We find that the more personable we are up there, the more activity we get. So we don't go in there and act like paranormal investigators. We go in and we be ourselves. You know, just like in the video, Bobby was himself and Jamie was herself and, you know, Jenny and myself. So, and Tony, we have a lot of fun with it. And I think that if you are an attractive, if you have an attractive personality, and it doesn't matter what you look like, your personality will bring those ghosts out of that snow shed. Because, I don't know, it's just like the whole theory on the party. You don't hang out with the person that's always the bummer of the group. You
right.
hang out with the guy that's most happy.
They seem to also be attracted to kids, I think.
Yes. When we went up with Mike Barnell, he has 6 kids.
Good. The Brady Bunch.
Yeah, he has either like 6 or 12 kids, I can't remember. But when we went up there, it got really active. And I think it was the energy that the kids were throwing out there. Some of them were a little, you know, unnerved. Others were acting really silly.
Mm-hmm.
And kids have a lot of energy.
Yes.
Yeah, especially teenagers.
Yes.
2 or 3 of those, so that's a lot of energy.
Yeah. Well, and we've gotten those kind of interesting EVPs that seem to be sort of young, kind of, I think they sound like Yoda. Yoda voices that interact with the kids. So, yeah. Well, Bobby, I think I mentioned to you on the first, and I don't know if you've ever had the opportunity to listen to it, but I actually have an EVP that says your name.
Oh, yeah, I remember you mentioning that. Yeah, no, I haven't heard that.
Yeah, I'll have to send you the link to it because it's kind of interesting. And at the time, I think when it happened, we had a kid named Bobby with us. But then when I talked to somebody else about it later, they said, well, we have an investigator named Bobby who goes up there. And apparently they've gotten your name on EVP more than once up there.
Wow, interesting.
They like you, Bobby.
They like you. You have that kid energy.
Or you're marked for death, one of the two.
Well, do you think that there's anything, because there's one little spot that I used to feel apprehensive in, I don't anymore. Do you think that there's anything up there that's evil, or do you think it's just all good kind of people without bodies?
I personally don't think that there's anything evil up there. I think that, in my opinion, people just think that something's evil when they don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe, you know, like when people, Area 61 seems to be kind of a spot where people feel uncomfortable or uneasy, you know, and they maybe say that there might be something evil or something that doesn't want them there.
Right.
You know, but I really don't get the sense of that any time that we're up at Wellington, that there's anything that's being, I'm trying to figure out the right word.
Ominous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Being ominous. I think they're just as curious about us as we are about them.
Yeah, they probably wonder why you come up there all the time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's just, I think this year we really want to focus on maybe trying to find that link of how we can communicate better amongst each other.
Yeah, I think that would be a really good idea, because they certainly are trying to communicate. When you go up there, are there times when nothing happens?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of times.
It's usually whenever Jenny and Bobby are around.
That's because they're just watching and laughing. What I thought was interesting is, of course, when we went up on the first, one of the things, we sort of thought something was going to happen. And at 142, I know you were, it was you and Tim and Bobby, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And Jim.
And that
Jim
was down there.
And Jim was down there. And then we were up a ways. Mm-hmm. And I saw on the film that you were watching your clock at 142, and we were doing the same thing. So what do you think about what happened at 142?
Well, me personally, I never really got a chance to see anything or really hear anything. But that was during a time that, you know, I think if I was part of that accident or part of the dead, I probably wouldn't want to return. You know, that was a tragic time for their lives, and I wouldn't want to really go back and relive that. So I'm not surprised that, for me, anything happened. I know some others had seen a few things, you know, lights and stuff like that. I know when I was standing on the snow shed, or not the snow shed, but the walkway out to the outlook, I remember that I could feel myself rocking back and forth. And it was almost like you were on a subway or a train or something like that. And I have to account for my feet being frozen and wet for that, because, of course, I didn't bring any warm or dry shoes. So we spent, what, 13 hours with my wet feet and freezing toes.
But we had the fire.
We did have the fire.
Yeah.
Smoke some sock.
Yeah. We did smoke some sock. That's true. Well, and so, Jamie, why don't... Jenny, you were with us too, right? You were with us as we walked down at 142. Yeah. Did you see the same thing Jamie and I saw? I don't remember.
Yeah, I saw lights down the tunnel.
Yeah, and we thought that it was probably the four of you having split up. And that wasn't the case, we figured out when we got down to you. So, and then, I don't know. I know that Bert and Jamie, you got the stop EVP. Did you get anything else?
No, we didn't get anything else. Matter of fact, the recorders started cutting out. It was so cold up there that the batteries were being drained left and right. And I know that that's part of the theory with paranormal activity, is they suck the energy right out of those batteries. But I think that, and Jim, you're right, our recorder, our video recorder, the battery, we used it for like 6 minutes, and the battery was half drained. So
that was cold.
To do with it. It was freezing, and the wind was blowing. Toes, ears, nose.
We talk like that's surprising. We were up there, you know, in the middle of winter in the Cascade Mountains. So, probably shouldn't be surprised that we were a little cold, huh?
I was going to say, when you say it's like inviting some friends over to your house, you know, that's if your house is in Sweden in the middle of winter and the gas company just cut you off.
That's what it would be like.
So, Bobby and Jenny, did you guys get to listen to all your audio?
Did we have audio that night?
I think your battery's
dead. Oh, that's right. The battery went dead, so we couldn't, we didn't have batteries, so we couldn't do any audio.
Yeah, and I got a few things that were kind of interesting. One of them that I don't know if I sent you or not, because I wanted to wait until I had seen the film you took. When we were all standing there and you were filming us and we were doing that introduction, while I was talking, saying, "Hi, it's Karen from Paranormal Underground," there's a female voice talking under me. And so I wanted to see if Jamie or Jenny were talking, because they were the only other two with female voices, unless, you know, Bobby was doing a voice or something. And they weren't. So I have that. And then I have some really quiet things that use almost the sound of water as a backdrop. And Bert, you had a theory about those.
Yeah, now water can give running water can give you that white noise that you need to get the EVPs. So because the dead aren't, they didn't bring their voice boxes with them, they're going to need those ambient sound waves to create speech. So I think that could help. It's like a white noise generator, for them to speak. Mm-hmm. And I know that when we were sitting around the fire, we thought that we were hearing voices. I mean, they're really, really clear. Until we got away from the water, and then, of course, it all went silent. So
yeah, but we even heard it with those whatever things Joe had, his MacGyver ears.
The ears. Yeah, and I think water can play a big trick on you. It's sort of like... special lighting, but
especially with the echoes and things.
Oh yeah,
we heard that one guy on top of Stephen's Pass yell down.
Yeah, that was weird. Was that somebody? Was that one of your people?
No. We can't figure out who it was.
That was really weird. But Bobby, didn't you see lights?
Yeah, at one point he flashed a flashlight down there, and then it turned red and stuff. And I guess, I don't know. Us ghost hunters have those type of flashlights, I guess. So I thought maybe it was one of us, or one of our crew, but yeah.
I thought it was a state patrol or something.
Flow from the fire in the snow shed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were just curious, but it really sounded like somebody was standing right next to us. And I know I shot out of my bed, which was the raft.
You were asleep. You were snoring before that.
That's what everybody keeps telling me.
You were. Both you and I don't know if it was you and Jim who were snoring or you and Joe, but two of you were snoring. I was getting it from both sides.
Yeah, and I shot right out of raft. And I remember asking what that was. What was that?
Yeah.
That was something strange. I mean, at 4:30 in the morning to hear someone yelling out what sounded like Wellington.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. So you can see how noise from, I don't know how far the snow shed is from to the highway 2, but that far away and it sounding like it's right next to you.
Right, right.
It really started to make me think about that whole water sound theory. And I thought, well, maybe it is just our ears and brain are trying to make voices out of, echoing sounds.
Yeah. So, yeah. But
that's not to say that we haven't heard things up there without the running water. I mean, we hear things. There are voices in August when there's no water running through the snow shed. You could clearly hear people talking.
Right. Well, the day that we hiked, the four of us, you, me, and Jim and Jamie, hiked down to Windy Point, and we had left the stuffed animals and the ball, remember?
Yeah.
And we hiked down, and on our way back, three of us heard very clearly a kid yell something. We didn't know what he yelled, but we heard a kid's voice yell something to us, and there wasn't anybody there because it was approaching. It was getting fairly, the sun was starting to go down. It was like late September.
That's
right. So yeah, things, you do hear things. And then we had another time where we were sitting on you weren't there. It was, Stephen and I, and we were sitting on the overlook and, we heard a voice yell up. It sounded like from down in the ravine, yell up, "Hey," and that was a kid's voice too. And the best, and it did it twice, and the best we could figure is it was probably somebody yelling from the freeway, and it sort of bounces and swirls and sounds like it's coming up from underneath you.
Yeah, and that's, I'm definitely, after we did hear that voice at 4:30, in the morning on March 1st, it triggered something that we definitely want to test out as soon as the weather gets better, with having some investigators up on Highway 2 and some of us down in the snow shed and seeing if we can hear each other from the highway and, you know, how the acoustics work.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to test out and do it from the overlook, too, and see if it sounds like it's swirling up from the river valley.
I think one of the things we'd like to test this year would be to have somebody like Jim in that bobsledding outfit standing in the middle of Highway 2 in 1 o'clock in the morning and yell out, you know, "I just saw an orb," and see what kind of reaction we get from the police department.
Hey, you know what we could do?
Hey.
We could... I'm not sure where he keeps the bobsledding outfit, but he's not home a lot because he works and I, you know, I'm unemployed, so I'm home all day. So I could find that bobsledding outfit and get it to Jamie, and Jamie could get a box mouth beaver on it.
Oh. Get one on there.
You're just jealous because I can take a dump without dropping trout.
It's got a zipper in the back.
There are some things you just don't want to do at 20,000 feet, and dropping your pants down around your ankles is one of them.
Poor Jim. He's been so maligned about his little singlet.
Mountaineering underwear.
You know, there have been very few times that I've been embarrassed to be seen with him. Usually it's the other way around, but that might have been one of them.
And, you know, that's one of those images that you will take with you after death. So if I go before you, Jim, I'm going to pull out that suit while you're asleep and all that.
Yeah, but if we're running downhill away from a bear, I'm going to be faster.
Because he's got wind resistance.
Yeah, less wind resistance.
Well, that'll do it. Oh, my. I don't think bears would even approach. You know, they'd be like, "Whoa, what is that? I don't know. Run away!
Run away! Run away!"
But I'm just some of the ideas to throw out there for this coming summer.
Well, we hope to be up there as much as we can, you know. But like you say, we're 3.5 hours away, so for us, it involves, you know, ditching the kids or making the kids go with us and getting Jim off of work and everything else. But my plan is to spend a lot of time up there again this summer, because it's obviously sort of captured my imagination, much in the same way that it's captured yours.
Yes.
We're getting a bee sting kit this time.
I would bring the kids as much as you can.
Yeah.
When we met them, they were fantastic. Even being stung by bees, you know.
Well, he did swear in front of you when he first got stung. He was just mortified by that. I said, "It's okay. They have a teenager."
Yeah.
I'm sure they've heard it before.
Yeah.
Well, he still reminds me. He still claims that I ran away from him while he was being stung by bees, as opposed to the fact that you and I were way ahead of them when they stepped on the bee's nest, and we just didn't run towards it.
From what I recall, you and Bert did run away from that.
Well, you know, I have my theory up there. You've heard my theory about the wild animals and stuff. I don't have to be the fastest person up there. Just have to be faster than one other person.
I just read that in the book this morning. I was laughing so hard at that.
But, yeah, so I think Bert and I just had enough of a head start that we were smart enough to not run back towards you.
Well, I don't know about you, but I was running my butt off. I didn't want anything to do with those bees.
Well, and then Jim's running behind Jamie, whapping her in the back. Poof!
I'm getting beat by Jim on my way out of here.
We're probably lucky that we all didn't tumble off the roof of the snow shed into a heap of bees and bodies. We'd be haunting up there now if we had.
I was going to say, yeah, but there were no bee stings under all those bruises, were there?
So aside from bees, why don't you guys talk about some of the other animals that you've seen up there? Because it also is a mountain hiking trail that's very remote.
I think, the Saturday before we hiked in for the Honeyeater anniversary, we were up there with Tim and Paul, And unfortunately, Paul got his truck stuck, and we had to leave it there overnight. And on our way back from retrieving all his stuff from his truck, we heard a cougar growling at us, letting us know of his presence.
Yeah, it was a pretty loud scream.
That's kind of cool.
It's cool now?
Now that you've lived through it, that's what I meant.
Yeah, I don't think any of us were carrying firearms except for Paul. So, and Paul was carrying all the stuff, so we quickly divvied out everything out of Paul's hands to keep his gun hand free.
Yeah.
It's like, Paul, give me your laptop.
Yeah.
The year before that, when we dug our way in and Bert and I was alone, we ran into a black bear and a cinnamon bear.
So are you more likely to see them during the winter when you're going in? And do they sort of disappear when there are more people coming through?
I think in the early spring is when you kind of see the bear.
Yeah. The last thing we ever want to do is run into a mother and her cub, and that's coming up here in a little bit. And according to one of the government websites, a few years ago, they populated that mountain full of bears. I mean, not a few, but a lot.
That's good to know.
Yeah. So it's, and truthfully, the bears really aren't the ones to worry about. It's definitely that cougar. And there's a couple cougars up there. And they make their presence known. It's when they don't, that's when you need to worry about it. Like when we were smelling the urine inside the snow shed and heard all that running around.
Yeah.
The year before when we were investigating the crash site, and Bobby, you saw those eyes, beady eyes looking at us.
We heard something jump down out of the trees in front of us, and I had my headlamp on, and I shined it between these two trees that were close together, and I saw these greenish-yellow eyes, and that was it.
Well, and that's why when people watch the videos that you put up on your website, nwpia.com, and on YouTube, they notice that you guys have guns.
That's right, and there's a lot of people that are totally against that, and I think that's their right as much as we carry ours, but we've run into so many animals up there that we'd rather be prepared than not prepared. And it's not just the animals. There are some strange people up in those woods. And we don't want to be caught off guard at any time. You're in a remote area with very little cell phone service. So
right.
It's always the medic kit and a 40 or a 45 caliber handgun.
Right.
But we're not militia, we're not anything like that at all. And even though that I think we may get off that appearance, we want people to know that we're not mean, ruthless.
You're ghost hunters with guns for a reason.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not like we go to Seattle with our gun. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
It's not like we go to Tacoma with. No, wait a minute.
We're unconcealed up at Wellington.
I've frankly been grateful for their presence, since we don't have guns. I just have my stupid pink taser, and Jim has a seal knife, and we have bear spray, and that's about it.
And the machete. Can't forget the machete.
The machete.
That's right. And the little...
And the bobsledding suit.
And the bobsledding suit. He just kept pulling stuff. He, you know, I was a little worried that he and MacGyver were going to have a MacGyver off.
Yeah, that was interesting.
We should definitely have one of those next year.
Somebody's been crimping my budget.
I don't know who that would be. He's talking about his unemployed wife again. You're just so horrible. When we were up there on the 1st, we kind of walked around a little bit, but we did a lot of sitting around the fire, too, because it was really cold up there.
It was. And I think it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'll probably do it next year if it's that cold or snowy, just because I'm more of a tropical person. But we definitely want to show ourselves to the people that were there if they were to come out on the anniversary. We wanted to be there to support them, the spirits.
Right.
And because we have been up there so much and for so long, it was real important to all of us.
Right.
If we needed it. And
right.
I was really happy that you and Jim got a chance to come along I know that you guys feel as much towards Wellington as we do, so.
And I know it was important to Bert and I because the year before, you know, we had spent so much time digging and trying to get in there in the snow.
Yeah.
Just so we can get back into Wellington, that it kind of opened our eyes and we appreciated Wellington a lot more. And we wanted to share that with, you know, the NWPIA members and you right. and Jim. You know, kind of share that experience of, you know, this is what it takes to get in there at the beginning of the season if you really want to get in there. And it just gives you that drive.
Yeah, yeah, well, definitely. And I'm really glad we did it. I think other than, you know, the bobsled suit jokes, I don't know, are you glad we did it?
Oh, yeah, I had a great time.
Yeah, we had a good time. And, of course, Bobby and MacGyver kept things interesting.
They did, and, you know, thank God for them.
That's right. We now have our new 100-year Wellington anniversary mascot shirts, courtesy of them. Who actually came up? Jim and I have been arguing with this. I said it's the Boxmouth Beaver. And what do you keep saying?
I thought it started out as the Boxmouth Raccoon.
I think it was the raccoon at first, and then Joe said beaver, and you know
that was funnier.
Beaver just, you know, just keeps the B words going, so it just sounds better than the raccoon.
That's right, and yes, so that was we had a lot of conversation about Boxmouth Beavers. And now whenever I read anything, like when you wrote that thing on about the chainsaw, or what is it?
It's a box full of chainsaws.
If you stick your leg in a Boxmouth Beaver nest, you're already dead.
When I wrote that on Facebook?
Yes, I can hear you saying that. When Bert said I could hear you saying that, I thought, yeah, so could I.
It was a lot of fun. And then when Jenny came up with the drawing for it, it was perfect.
It is.
With Bobby's tweaking of Jamie's or of Jenny's drawing,
it was a team effort, huh?
It definitely was, yeah.
Oh, well, cool.
So they work well together, even investigating me.
Two peas in a pod.
Do you want to talk about the information that I got when I had this rather unexpected reading the other night, or no?
Yeah, I think that it'd be good. It'll give everybody a chance to kind of come up with their own idea.
Okay.
We want to make sure that we're real broad with everything that we look at. I mean,
Right. Well, I actually went back through and I made a bunch of notes. Jim's going to go grab my laptop because I made notes because as I listened to it again yesterday, and I wanted to ask you about some of the things that she said. To see if there are any connections there. So real quickly, for anybody who's listening, I'll explain. I, in this next month's issue of Paranormal Underground, I had a psychic reading through a psychic medium, and I'm going to write an article about it. The psychic medium's name was Jennifer Hicks. She's been profiled on our podcast before, and I expected it to be dead grandmother stuff. I expected that I would hear about my dead grandma and my dead grandpa and, you know, personal things. And it turned out to be all about Wellington, which was it was a surprise. And so I emailed...
Surprise to her, too.
Yeah. So I emailed Bert about it and said, I got this information. Are you interested in hearing anything about it? And he was kind of receptive to it. So let me find some of my notes. The first thing she said to me is, who's Milton? And, Milton is associated with the book. And so Milton, there was a Milton up there, and he was a brakeman, and his name was Milton Hicks. And she did that without any prompting. Who's Milton? He wants to talk to you about the book. So that started it off, and Milton, I kind of decided, might be the guy down in Area 51, because he said he's...
61,
thank you. Because he said he protects them, and he's the protector, and that's the one that seems to be kind of protective. So, have you ever heard anything up there like that sounds like keys clinking, or is there anything associated with a big wad of keys up there that comes to mind?
Geez, I don't know if I remember hearing anything like keys.
Okay, all right.
I really dig at that one because
Yeah, because that would be one thing that we probably just maybe mentioned during the EVP session, but never
thought about.
Okay.
It might be hard to pick out over the water, too.
So I have a hunch I know what this is, but I want to ask you guys. So she said, I'm seeing a teeny tiny little shack, and the people got off the train, and they went into this shack where it was warm, but the shack was wiped out by an avalanche.
That would have been Cascade train station.
The Beanery?
The depot?
Yeah.
The Beanery at Cascade Station.
I thought maybe it was the Beanery where they went to eat.
Yeah, that would be the one, because they just left, and I think later that night, the avalanche hit it and killed the two cooks.
Right, right. Okay, well, and I thought that was a pretty good one when she said that. So, they had a dog with them. Do you know if they had a dog with them?
So far, I haven't read anything about a dog, but it's really interesting because we keep hearing dog barks there. And I think you remember this summer, we were talking about it sounded like a little chihuahua, and we couldn't figure out what in the hell would somebody drop off their chihuahua for.
That was the night that we, remember we went down to the crash site?
Yes.
And we kept hearing a little dog?
Yeah.
More than one night. Seems like several times.
Yeah. It was, yeah.
She said they had a little dog, and it was black and white.
I don't remember reading anything in any books about a dog, but... we sure have heard dog barking. Now, it's different from, like, a wolf, obviously, and, what do you call it? A fox?
Like it was, like, a smaller dog.
Like one of my little yappy dogs.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, interesting. So that might be something to watch for, then, and see if anything comes of that. So do you guys have anything that's, like, embroidered or cross-stitched that has to do with Wellington?
Our clothes would be the only, you know, the, yeah, for sure, it's the box mouth.
Yeah, we just made these box mouth beaver shirts, but we don't have any other clothing or anything that has
Wellington
on it.
Okay, all right. Do you know if there was a dentist or somebody who did dental work on the train or around there?
There was a doctor.
There was a doctor.
Oh, he came later, remember?
That's right. It was the lawyer. But Sherlock's father was a doctor. And Sherlock's the guy that ended up cutting the piece of wood out of the kid's head.
Right.
He was the only one that really, I guess, that had the know-how on how to do it.
Right.
So, and Sherlock was the telegraph operator on the night shift.
No dentist.
I'll look into it.
She mentioned that the bodies, one of the brakemen told her that the bodies weren't found for months.
Correct.
Right. And the body found was Archie. Was it Archie the brakeman? Do you know?
Yeah.
I thought Archie was a mail sorter.
There were two Archies, actually.
I thought it was
Archie McDonald. I think they found him.
Oh, I can look on the website and see what he was. Hang on.
I know that the last body that they found was in July.
Does the number 17 mean anything to you guys up there as far as poles? That's the only thing I could figure was 17 poles and 53. She came up with two numbers, 17 and 53.
Well, we marked the poles last year with chalk. And numbered them all the way up to...
He was a brakeman.
Was he?
He was a brakeman, guys.
Okay,
yeah. So do you know which one number 17 is?
I would say it would be the gray one.
Yeah, the gray one that's kind of crumbling a little bit.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, yeah. With maybe a little moss on it, gets wet when it rains.
Exactly. Yeah, there's dirt next to it somewhere.
Yeah, there probably is dirt. Okay, well, interesting. Let's try and remember 17 and see what we can find out this next time we're up there and see.
The beginning of the snow shed, which would be near the 17th pole, is where a lot of activity starts. But it also, you know, continues through the entire snow shed.
Right, right.
But they're hot spots. Through there.
Right. He also showed her a waterfall. And the only thing that I could figure out is that when the snow runoff does, it runs down the hill in that rock bed where the bridge walks across.
Haskell Creek.
So does that look sort of like a waterfall?
I got to tell you, the snow shed in the spring turns into one huge waterfall.
Oh, okay.
Probably one of the most spectacular things you've ever seen. It's like walking underneath a waterfall because you know how you look outside of the snow shed and you can see the mountains?
Mm-hmm.
Well, think that as just a solid wall of water.
Hmm.
It is absolutely spectacular.
So that a waterfall actually makes sense then.
Mm-hmm. And there's quite a few waterfalls along the way.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so the flowers in the summer, are there purple flowers?
Yes.
The woman who sings up there, and you know there's a woman who sings, obviously, she said she stands by the purple flowers.
Okay, so that would make sense. When I first heard the woman sing with Mike, it was in the area. We were standing in the parking lot. We were looking towards where, you know, the tank is. So we're mm-hmm. looking where the mountains kind of be.
Right.
And that in the springtime is loaded full of those flowers.
Okay.
Like Indian pink flowers and stuff like that.
So that does make sense. Okay. And she holds out, she holds out a journal. And she talks about that she chronicled her time when she was there.
Okay.
And that... she was very religious, that she was an older woman, and that her name sounds something like convent. So, I would get Sarah Covington from that.
Yeah, or it could have been somebody later, you know, because I know that the town itself stayed for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
So it could have been a woman that stayed up there during that time period too, because it's interesting you bring it up. There was a woman who wrote a small article about her life in Wellington, and she was a young girl, woman, and she was really passionate about the town. She loved the town, but she also loved scenic too. And her sister used to travel back and forth. So
I know who you're talking about. Her father was like the engineer, the site engineer.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay, you do. So, because every once in a while I start thinking of these, you know, things that I thought I had read, and I thought, well, maybe it's a dream. You know?
I think her father was the engineer, one of the engineers on the new tunnel, the lower tunnel.
Okay, cool. So that does make sense. So, I don't know. It could have been the lady, Karen, that you're talking about, too, because she was an avid writer.
Okay.
Not only that, but she was also kind of one of the guys.
Okay, well, she sings. That's the woman who sings.
Okay.
So, and she's by the purple flowers. That's where she hangs out. There's somebody on the bridge. And I'm assuming that the bridge means when you first walk into the snow shed.
Mm-hmm.
The initials EF came. And I found, actually, it wasn't even that. She said she kept being shown Elmer Fudd. And so she guessed that maybe it was the initials EF. Well, there was a fireman, Earl Fisher, and I think that was the only person in all of the town and stuff that I found. Yeah, okay. That's all I found with that. Okay. So she kept seeing repeatedly, it like a checkers or chessboard, red and black checks. What, do you have any idea? I know the blankets that they wrapped the bodies in were checkered?
They were, but O'Neill loved playing chess.
Okay.
And he had mentioned, or he was talking to one of the guys on the railroad, and see, O'Neill was really, he was the superintendent of the railroad at the time. He was real passionate about working with the men. Even though he was seen as the big boss, he would grab a shovel and he would start shoveling. And one part of the book, Miss Martin, it talks about how O'Neill was talking to one of the kids, and he told him, he had asked him, he said, do you play chess? And the kid said, not really. And he said, well, we're going to have to teach you, and I promise after we get done with this, I'll play chess with you. And he said, well, who's going to teach me? And O'Neill said, well, Sherlock. Well, all of the practical jokes that this kid that was talking to O'Neill, he was this huge practical joker, and Sherlock hated him.
Oh, was that the Bobby or the Meek? His name is like Meek or something?
Meese. Right.
Yeah, he was one of the engineers.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they didn't.
Meech. It was Meech.
That's what it was. So, anyway, there was a huge practical joke, and Sherlock ended up calling him on it. He wasn't all that happy with it, so he ended up getting them back. So, you know, the story kind of matches the whole chess checker thing. But
all right, so it could mean, okay. Have you guys ever seen something that just looks like a body part, not a whole person, like a hand or a foot or just a body part when you've been up there?
Not like body parts. Laying.
No. I mean, like, she just said, like, something coming out at you, like a body part, low to the ground.
Yes.
Okay.
The night that Tim and I, or that I saw No Face, prior to that, both Tim and I were walking through the snowshed together, and we both kind of stopped. Because I had seen what seemed to me as, like, a foot coming out. You know, so it was low to the ground. And at first I was just going to dismiss it as being animal because it was low to the ground. But Tim had stopped and he said, "Whoa, I just saw something." And I said, What did you see? And he said that he saw his. It was a little over 6 feet tall and it was like just a head coming out of the pillar. We determined that it was the same pillar. And I was like, "Really?" Because what I had saw was like a foot coming out of the pillar.
Okay, so that actually makes some sense then.
Yeah.
Okay, so next I asked about the kids. She said, HB, who's Harry? Well, one of the kids that was up there was a little girl, Harriet Beck. So, and then she asked if there was any other kids, and she said, somebody calls out the words little brother. I actually wrote this down verbatim. I hear somebody speaking German, where they have German descent. And was there another little girl from a different family who was about 3 years older with an L sound at the beginning?
With an L?
Oh, a little girl with an L sound who was about, yeah, who was about 3 years older than HB, who was 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. I can answer it. I just...
Is it Lindsay? No.
It was Lillian Sterrett has an L sound. She was 9. Harriet Beck was 6, and she had a little brother, Leonard.
Oh.
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah, so I actually... So those are there are three, and that's who's up there, are those three. And the person with them isn't their dad. The person who takes care of them is Raymond. Who's Raymond? Who's Raymond? And he was, like, shouting in her head. She said, "Raymond, Raymond, Raymond."
And that's who we were talking about earlier, the the kid with the chunk of wood in his noggin.
Yeah, it's Lillian's older brother. And right. That also would make sense because we kept trying to find out who's No Face, and he wouldn't say. And it was when we were getting ready to hang up the phone, like, seriously, she was saying, "Well, bye, I'll talk to you soon." And she said, he started shouting in her head again, "Raymond, Raymond, Raymond." And she said, "Okay, Raymond, what do you want?" And he said, "I'm the guy on the bridge." And that's how she was referring to No Face, is who's the guy on the bridge.
Well, that definitely gives us something to work off of. Because if we go up there and you know, making sure that people know who he is,
mm-hmm.
then as soon as we walk in there and ask, "Hey, Raymond, is that you?" He should be relieved to hear his voice, and we may be able to capture something, so...
Yeah, I hope so.
In 3 weeks from now, when we go back up, or whenever you guys are ready, let's test it out and see what happens.
Okay. All right. Did any one of you put something near Area 61? Did you hang something? Did you set something on the ground? Did you give something to anybody there?
Yes.
Okay.
Jamie grabbed a cigarette out of my pocket. And that was... we placed lights there. Jenny, you were there with Tony when you guys were working down there. You know, Jamie and I had to go to Seattle. Was that Area 61 or was that closer in?
Okay. Well, and that's where I was planning on putting my book, was in Area 61 for them, too.
You know, we spent a lot of time there last year.
Yeah.
That's where we were trying the guitars and...
That's right.
Try talking to them, you know, by name.
I don't remember putting an object there.
No.
Didn't you guys... Was that you, Karen, that put the teddy bear and stuff down there?
I put those down by the kids' pole, I think.
Oh, that was
down by 29 or so.
17.
What? That's what I'm wondering is if that was pole 17, yeah. Did you light candles? And I already know the answer to this.
Yes, we did.
Yes.
Ever.
Yeah.
That was Halloween, right?
Yeah, that was Halloween. So I asked if they were aware that we were there on the 1st. And what they said is... We were all there. She said that she literally saw dozens and dozens and dozens of people around us while we were there.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I can throw out that theory of them not wanting to be there on their own anniversary. But, yeah, it was an important 100 years, as much for us as it was, I'm sure, for them, it sounds like.
Yeah, definitely.
They saw us coming and thought, oh, here we go.
Yeah, maybe. Well, the other thing is, remember when we were hiking in, what I said, with because we were dragging the sleds and the raft, what it looked like?
Oh, the bodies.
Yeah, and I actually worried about that as we were dragging that in, that it looked like the bodies.
Yeah, thank you about that.
Okay.
Like, Jim, yours looked more like a body sled than ours.
Yeah, Jim's looked a lot like a body sled. It
but
did.
Mine was aerodynamic, damn it.
So, and the other thing is, she said that they wanted you to know, and all of us who spend a lot of time up there, that they know that we're there, that they appreciate what we're trying to do, that they appreciate what we're trying to do for them as far as sharing their story, and that the one that is Milton actually... he's there to protect, but he's also there to protect us, and he also protects us in our lives because of what we're doing up at Wellington.
Well, that's kind of nice to hear. I mean, it's actually very heartwarming. Does that mean we no longer have to carry those heavy guns? Because
I don't think Milton probably has a gun that actually fires anything other than like ectoplasm or something.
That's probably comforting, and that's probably why a lot of us, you know, when we do go through the snow shed, we don't get a sense of anything really being threatening in there.
No, it feels like home. So that's pretty much what I have from the reading. Like I said, I just sort of took notes of things that I didn't understand or I thought you might be able to come up with or that type of things. But it was 2 hours of pure Wellington, which was a little bit surprising to me. I'm not disappointed that that's what it was.
That's some good stuff. I'm curious about No Faith. You know, I mean, of course I'm hungry for more now that I've seen him, but now this year I'm hoping that other people get the opportunity to see him, especially Jenny and Bobby. I hope they see him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now I want him to come up and shake my hand and tell me his name and tell me some stories.
Well, yeah, I know. That's, yep.
I think this year, I mean, we've been discussing, like, different ways to try and communicate with them, and we have a bunch of ideas and some theories that we definitely want to test out this year, and hopefully... You know, we'll nail the right tool that we can definitely communicate with each other.
Well, that'd be terrific if you could, because they quite clearly want to communicate. One of the things that Jennifer said when she was doing the reading was that it's very unusual, first of all, not to have a reading about a person's personal life, but also that it's very unusual to make contact with somebody who's been dead for over 100 years. And she says that one of the things they told her is that they have tried to communicate with people almost since this happened. And that finally now maybe they're starting to be able to have somebody listen and have that communication. So that's something that you guys are doing, and that's something that definitely, you know, you can be proud of. Because if they've been trying to communicate for 100 years and you guys finally listened...
I guess you were the chosen... Or we're there at the right time.
Yeah, well, why do you think that you guys are drawn back there?
Bert is a reincarnation of O'Neill.
That's my theory.
I'm drawn to it just, you know, I have no idea. It just keeps calling. It's, everybody has their own little thing, their place that they call their second home.
Yeah.
For myself, it's definitely Wellington and Maui.
Well, yes, Maui would be nice too.
Yeah. So
Maui's a slightly longer drive.
And Jim's little singlet wouldn't fit in Maui at all.
I think also too, I mean, we all enjoy the outdoors, like the outside. We investigate ghosts as our hobby, and it's an all-in-one kind of place for, you know, some of us. And
yeah,
everyone has their own personal special reasons why they keep going back.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. So tell me what some of your plans are then for this coming year with investigating up at Wellington. I know one of the things you're doing is that you're making yourself available for to give people tours. Is that right?
Yeah, I think with the amount of time that all of us have spent up there, we want to get the message across correctly, and also the story. It's one thing to kind of go out and look for a ghost. It's another to do it inside the a concrete snow shed that's falling apart. And you have all sorts of, you know, big bad animals up there all by yourself. So what we decided to do was to actually put ourselves out there to give tours and help people better understand Wellington and also the spirits while supporting them in security. You know, we just want to let people... that we want them to make their own choice of what they think Wellington is or the spirits are. We're just there to show them the correct way of doing it.
Just before we wrap up, one last question, and that's that when people do come up to Wellington, and if they happen to get up there on the one day of week that you guys aren't there for some reason, what would you ask people up at Wellington?
Respect. Treat them like you would any other human being.
And respect your environment that you're in.
Yeah.
And listen, and, you know, kind of listen for other people coming down the snow shed. The last thing we want are unhappy people up there shooting at each other.
Yeah, good.
I think we have a great team of investigators that are seasoned now. So, you know, we're real thankful for that. And people that support us even in the time of distress.
Yeah. And you guys investigate places other than Wellington, too.
Oh, that's right. We go all over the place for investigations. It just happens to be that Wellington's a little bit closer than Seattle to us.
We hit it pretty hard last year. So this year, I mean, it may be a little bit slower than it was last year.
Yeah. That's just the dog, sorry. I'm not sitting here farting or anything, I promise. Yeah, that's Jim trying to get into a singlet. He's going to be mad at me. It's a good thing he's working tonight or he probably wouldn't, you know, I'd probably pay for it. Okay, well, our dogs are getting really restless, I can tell. Can you tell?
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't, normally I shut them out, but since Jim's in here with me today, I couldn't do it. So, I appreciate you guys taking the time to talk to us. We really, I don't know if you know how much it means to me that you've allowed us to participate in your time up in Wellington, but it's become really important to us. And so I appreciate that. And the other thing is it's become really important to a lot of people who read Paranormal Underground magazine and listen to our podcasts too.
Well, we're thankful that you're able to share the experience with us and get attached as much as we are. That's what, you know, it's one thing to have people go with you and go, yeah, this is kind of cool. See you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Other to drive 6 hours to spend another six hours in a snow shed that's cold and 4 feet of snow, and you know that means a lot to us.
Yeah, we love sharing the opportunity with people that are just as passionate about Wellington as we are. It's exciting to find out that there's there's more people like us.
Yeah, well, hopefully some people will take you up on your offer and get in contact with you, because I think that to be able to explore a place like Wellington with the people who know it best is really kind of a really good opportunity for people.
And we, you know, if you ever get a chance, and we are doing, when we start doing tours up there, it'd be nice to have you up there to kind of talk about your book and your experiences too, because I can only go off of, you know, the experiences that I've seen and heard, and Jamie's, and hopefully by then Bobby and Jenny will have their
experience.
Mm-hmm. So
all you got to do is say the word. You know, you don't have to do much to get me up there.
Okay.
Karen, you want to go to Wellington? Okay. All right. I think I've turned it down once. I think, actually, I even once had Tanner miss one of his soccer games so we could go.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
That was Halloween. He missed his soccer game so he could be up there. But he wanted to, too. He likes it, too. Our kids like it just as much as we do.
That's even better.
Yeah.
The next generation that will protect it.
That's right. Okay, well, good. Thank you so much, guys.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Paranormal Underground Presents is a presentation of Paranormal Underground and Ghost Knight Media. For more information, please visit www.paranormalunderground.net or www.ghostnightmedia.com.